Karen Hartglass, and you're listening to It's All About Food. Thank you for joining me. It's August 1st, 2012. August 1st. Here we are in the middle of summer, feeling it in different ways depending on where you are. Maybe it's too hot, maybe it's too cold, maybe it's too dry, maybe it's too wet. I don't know. Is it ever just right? Well, here on the show, we talk about food, and I like to say that each food has its own story, and one of the foods that's in front of me right now with all kinds of stories is corn. We're seeing corn connected to so many different things, not just feeding us and whether it's healthy or not to eat a particular kind of corn, but how it's associated with drought and energy and relations with other countries. It's connected to so many different things. And I know that so many of us are overwhelmed with our own lives and all the different things that are going on in them, that it's really hard to think past today. But we need to. We all need to take part, take responsibility in what goes on all around us, not just for today and for tomorrow and the next month, but for years and decades ahead, to make sure things are sustainable. Keyword sustainable. And we're going to be talking a lot about sustainable agriculture today and that farm bill thing that's running around in our government that's kind of overwhelming and confusing. And perhaps we'll bring a little clarity today. And I'm going to bring on my guest, Susan Perlman, who is the executive director of the National Sustainable Agriculture Coalition, and she guides the organizational development and implementation of their strategic vision. She's a graduate of Georgetown University Law Center and a member of the DC Bar. She has advocated for a more sustainable approach to agriculture for a decade. Welcome to It's All About Food, Susan.
Thank you very much, Karen. I'm so happy to be here.
Thank you, and thank you for joining me with not very much notice.
Oh, sure, not a problem.
I appreciate it. But I have been so wanting to talk more about sustainable agriculture and the Farm Bill on this show, and so I'm glad we're finally going to do that. Can you tell me a little bit about National Sustainable Agriculture Coalition? I love when people work together. That word coalition, I love.
Yeah, and we are a true coalition. So we have a staff of 10 people here on Capitol Hill. We're right across from the Capitol building. And we go and we speak with members of Congress and also with people from the agency, including leaders at the USDA. But we're also a coalition of over 90 member organizations from around the country. These are organizations that work with and represent farmers from around the country. And they get out to the grassroots and they tell them what's going on in Washington in terms of federal agricultural policy. And they get people to weigh in with their members of Congress and with other opinion leaders and decision makers at pivotal times. So we are a coalition. We do form our policies in a democratic way based on the feedback we get from farmers and consumers about what's working for them on the ground.
Okay, that sounds really good. Well, I think part of the problem sometimes with our government is most of us are so busy that we just like to leave it to them, and they're not doing a very good job, certainly not with our food.
And one thing I would say is that every taxpayer is contributing to the Farm Bill. The Farm Bill is this large legislative vehicle. It's what sets most agricultural policy in this country. And the current Farm Bill that Congress is now debating costs $1 trillion over the course of 10 years. It's your money, so you have a lot at stake, and you have a right to be heard.
Yeah, and when we're paying, I wish when I was filing my federal income tax return every year that there was a box, a bunch of boxes of how I could select where my taxes would go, but unfortunately that doesn't happen because there's a lot of things I wouldn't be supporting with my taxes.
And the way you do that, I mean, the mechanism that our founding fathers gave us is you get to vote for members of Congress, and you are their constituent, and you get to let them know how you feel about the job that they're doing and how they should vote on questions that are arising in Congress.
We're going to talk more about that, but let's get into some of the nitty-gritty, if possible, about the Farm Bill. So my understanding is it maybe we could talk a little bit about the history. So in its inception, it really was doing wonderful things, and over time and re-scripting of the bill, it's kind of gotten a little out of control.
Yeah, so the Farm Bill, just to give a overview, this is the big piece of legislation that sets agricultural policy for the federal government. It comes up about once every 4 to 7 years, something like that. And it spends a lot of money. Now, the number one place it spends money currently is in nutrition programs. But it also spends money for programs like direct payments and crop insurance, which subsidize a small handful of row crops, and these are things like corn, soy, cotton, rice, wheat, things like that. And then there are other programs, like there are energy programs and rural development programs and research programs. So all of this is encompassed within the Farm Bill.
The thing is, people will say, but why do I care? Why should I care?
Well,
And there's a lot of reasons why we should
care.
There
are a lot of reasons why people should care. First of all, some of the smaller programs in terms of dollar amounts do a lot of great work on the ground. So there's a program in the current Farm Bill called the Farmers Market Promotion Program. This helps to get farmers markets into communities, and it also helps for low-income Americans who are receiving SNAP, the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program benefits, which were formerly called food stamps.
Mm-hmm.
It helps them to use those at farmers markets. You know, so there's a lot of great things that the Farm Bill does. The Senate's version of the new Farm Bill, it's still working its way through Congress, but the Senate's version contains a provision that would give you double benefits if you are a SNAP recipient at farmers markets. In other words, encouraging people to eat healthy, locally produced fruits and vegetables.
Oh, I like
that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it's a hodgepodge of some things that make people deeply concerned and other things that a lot of people greatly support.
You mentioned just briefly crop insurance, and I understand that there's some movement from subsidies to crop insurance. Can you explain a little about crop insurance and why some people are going in that direction?
Sure. So there are different titles of the Farm Bill. One title is the commodity title. That's where direct payments are housed. And another title is insurance. And we believe at NSAC in having a safety net for farmers. Farming is a risky business. There's weather. There's also the price fluctuations. There are reasons to have, some sense of certainty in terms of farming. Traditionally, in past Farm Bills, the commodity title with its direct payments has been a much larger title in terms of money going out the door than the insurance title. However, that's changed. Now insurance is significantly bigger than the commodity title. There's been a drumbeat by some of the top opinion leaders around the country that the direct payments are not a good system and they should go. And Congress is hearing that message to a certain degree, but the concern is, are they just shifting that same amount of money from direct payments into insurance payments? The way that the insurance works in the Farm Bill is the USDA has a handful of maybe 13 private insurance companies. Taxpayers subsidize part of the premiums that the farmers pay for insurance, and they also subsidize the private insurance companies for some of their administrative costs of running the insurance program. What we at the National Sustainable Agriculture Coalition say in regard to these types of payments is they should be fair and they should reward good action. So we want them to have reasonable limits so that some of the wealthiest farmers don't get obscenely huge payments at the taxpayers' expense. And we want them to be coupled with basic conservation requirements so that we're not inadvertently giving people incentive to break out new land or to farm on sensitive and marginal land that harms the environment and costs the taxpayer a lot of money.
Now, obviously, you're recommending these things because it's good policy, but also because there is a bit of abuse that goes on with the Farm Bill. There have been larger, high-revenue farms that are the mega businesses that aren't these cozy individual farmers that we have in our minds image, where they take advantage of the Farm Bill. They find the loopholes and find ways to get, I want to call them subsidies, but sometimes it's insurance and depends on how they're getting it.
Insurance is a subsidy, and you're exactly right. I mean, first of all, the system is designed to allow what some people would consider abuse to start with, and then there are loopholes that we say that are big enough to drive our tractor through. So you're right on. You're right there.
Yeah. So it needs to be fair.
Yes.
And so the question is, there are coalitions like yours that are making recommendations, and you go across the street and you talk to people, and what are the responses?
Well, we were very pleased in the Senate that we were able to get a lot of helpful reform. So the process is, it starts with the Senate Agriculture Committee, where we were able to get some good language in there. Then it went to the Senate floor, and there were some good amendments passed, and also some bad amendments fended off. Let me make a point that the current Farm Bill, so the Farm Bill is a nickname, it's not the true name of the piece of legislation. The current law is called the Food Conservation and Energy Act of 2008. The Senate's current bill, for the new Farm Bill is called the Agriculture Reform, Food and Jobs Act of 2012. The House Agriculture Committee's bill is called the Federal Agriculture Reform and Risk Management Act of 2012. And the point I'm making there is that both of them say reform in their title.
Mm-hmm.
And the question is, how much reform is there? We were able to get some good reform through the Senate, less so on the House side so far.
That's not surprising. Okay. And so what have been some of those reforms on the Senate side? And ultimately, everybody's got to agree.
Yes, right, right. So ultimately, everybody has to agree, and it's hard. But again, the basic reforms that we want to see are payment limitations so that some of the wealthiest farmers don't get unlimited payments under the various subsidy programs, and linking receiving subsidies to taking some basic care of the environment and not doing harm to wetlands, native grasslands, et cetera. And a variety of other reforms that we have. Those are what we're hoping to achieve at the end of the day.
Now, I was reading about the history of these farm bills that have had different titles over the years for different reasons. And originally it was, I guess, after World War II? It started before, like in the 30s, I think. So
farm bills were initially a reaction to the Great Dust Bowl during the Great Depression.
Mm-hmm. And so it was helping with all of the problems associated with the Dust Bowl, and then trying to prevent things like that from happening in the future. And then here we are, not quite 100 years later, but a lot of things have changed. Our technology has changed. Our type of farming has changed. And to get the laws to support our needs and come up to the current time is what's really difficult.
And also, if I might jump in and add that for a good chunk of time, there was a philosophy in federal agricultural policy, get big or get out.
Mm-hmm.
And policies were written around that, and to a great degree are still written, to benefit some of the largest producers at the expense of small and medium-sized producers. And, you know, we believe that there's a role for producers of all sizes, but we don't support a system that squeezes out small and middle-sized producers. They should be able to thrive and contribute healthy foods to their communities. And that's part of where we see a lot of room for improvement in agricultural policy.
Well, we're seeing the negative effects of not having small farms. So our economy is a mess, and many small farmers have been pushed out of their business because it wasn't economically feasible for them to produce a small amount of whatever it was they were growing. And as a result, these mega farms are using less people and finding ways to minimize their expenses so they can sell food very cheaply, but it's at a very expensive cost to employment, to jobs, and what's really important to me is the quality of the food isn't even as good.
Yeah, and I would say that some of the economic efficiencies are truly illusions, that some of the way that the largest farms support themselves are through subsidies from government, and that could be federal, state, or local government, plus through being able to externalize some of their costs onto others by not being strictly enough regulated. And that can be anything from pollution costs of water, air, and other kinds of pollution, but it also can be unfair business practices that harm others. And so in the House Agriculture Committee's farm bill, there was a really bad amendment that was added during the markup, is the term of art, that makes it less competitive. So the USDA has been trying to implement some regulations to improve competition so that segments aren't dominated by some of the largest producers. And so in the case of poultry, the poultry industry of vertical integrators that have unfair advantage over producers that fall under them in those sectors of the market, people have been trying to fix this problem, but you have some in Congress, including the House Agriculture Committee, that are trying to go in the opposite direction.
Well, the whole story behind animal agriculture is a nightmare from my point of view. I'm a vegan and I promote plant-based diet and encourage people to eat more plants as much as possible. But certainly there's been a lot of problems with factory farming, with CAFOs, and so much abuse, so much pollution, and so much unfairness, and yet they have a tremendous amount of power. And I understand this whole vertical integrated thing is crazy how we allowed it to happen, where small farmers can't get their animals slaughtered or they can't get their animals distributed, and these bigger operations that treat the animals so much more horrifically and do so much more polluting get all the benefits.
Yeah, that's part of what I'm talking about, you know, that we have to have a system that allows small and middle-sized producers to be able to thrive and survive. And a system that, for example, if you have all of the federally inspected slaughterhouses owned and operated by large integrators that don't allow some of the small and mid-sized producers to, you know, add their animals into those slaughterhouses, then they're going to push those, they might push those folks out of business. So Congress and the USDA have been doing some things to try to address those problems. But again, we take some steps forward and we take some steps back there.
I was talking earlier about corn, and corn is connected to so many crazy things these days. It's just unbelievable. So I remember reading a few months ago that the farmers planted a record number of acres of corn and everybody was jubilant. And then, like, later on that day, I read about the droughts that were coming.
Yeah.
And all of the acreage that were lost. And it's all connected, overplanting and corn that's being used not only a very small amount to feed people, hello, most of it either to feed animals, to feed people, and some of it goes into energy.
Yeah, that's right. So the two biggest uses of corn, and again, corn is heavily subsidized in a lot of different ways through our farm bill. And the number one way it's used is ethanol production. So there are a lot of federal government promotion of ethanol and therefore of corn growing, and also for the use of animal feed, and it's an open question that people are asking is, should we keep pushing ethanol production so hard if we have a corn shortage or the prices of corn are rising so high that it makes it unaffordable for many? But I take go back to your original point that when people hear about things like corn and soy, their mind goes to, you know, the corn of cob that they bought at the farmer's market or, you know, the tofu burger that they're eating, something to that effect, or tofu. But a lot of this is not going to human food directly.
Yeah, human food is a drop in the bucket.
And by the way, you know, one of the interesting facts about the Farm Bill is that things like fruits and vegetables are called specialty crops.
Don't you love that?
Yeah.
They're special to me. But
the things that I eat, you know, the food type of things are sort of a specialty item in the minds of the people who craft the policy.
Yeah, we need to change the way we think about food, that's for sure. At least get our government to change. So this thing about ethanol is really interesting because I know that a lot of congresspeople are waving this flag about how great it is because we need to become energy independent. And yet I've read some crazy numbers that it takes like two-thirds fuel, either coal or other non-sustainable sources, to make energy from corn. And so it's not very efficient. It uses a lot of other energy. And it's not as green as we think it is. And, of course, it competes with our food supply.
Yeah, so there are definitely energy input costs that go into the production of corn. So if you have vast acreage in monocropping row crops, you know, fence row to fence row, as they say, and they're having, you know, fossil fuel-based fertilizers and a lot of energy-intensive farming techniques, you know, the question arises, and people have done analyses of these, you know, how efficient is this of a way of producing energy?
But that information really isn't getting out there. A lot of people think this corn for ethanol is a good thing.
That's an interesting point about the public messaging around that.
The public and Congress. So,
but in Congress, right, so if you look at the motivation of the folks, if you come from a Corn Belt state, you want to bring home the bacon for your state. So the more, you know, federal supports you can get for corn production, the better, if you're from a district or state that is a big producer of corn.
But I think maybe some of that wealth isn't really from the sale of corn. It's from the government subsidies related to the corn. Because the more we grow, it's that supply and demand thing. The cost goes way down, and we don't sell the product for very much.
It depends on demand. So in the case of corn, you know, demand's been very high because of the ethanol requirement. So it really varies, but you know, I take your point. So the bigger question, if you sort of step back from specific crops and ask the bigger question, is what do we want our federal agriculture policy to deliver to the American people, and how do we craft policies that do that? You know, so one of the things that you don't see much of in the Farm Bill consideration is that we have an obesity epidemic.
Yeah, healthy,
in our nation.
Affordable, sustainable food.
Yeah, and how do we deliver the kinds of foods that people should be eating to them in an affordable way? I mean, those are, I think, really good questions to be asking.
Well, those specialty products have to become a lot more special.
Or a lot less special. So some of the things that the National Sustainable Agriculture Coalition supports are farm-to-school programs where we connect farmers with children in schools. And this serves a lot of purposes. One is just to get them fresh, locally produced, healthy fruits and vegetables and other kinds of foods, but also to have them engage in school gardens and to go out to farms and meet farmers and learn where their food comes from. To make them, you know, to establish lifelong healthy eating habits.
Okay,
you know, again,
so someone in their neighborhood wanted to get a farm-to-school program going. Do you know how one would do that or where they might go to get more information?
Well, you know, if I were in such a situation, I would go to my child's school and talk with their administrators and say, we'd like to have a farm-to-school program. There's some federal funding, and there was an open grant cycle, and it will become open again for those proposing farm-to-school programs to get funding to get them off the ground. But there may also be state and local money available for that. I mean, that I have to say it's a very popular they're really spreading around the country, and I think that people should have them in their communities.
Absolutely. Well, it comes back down to each one of us being responsible for our lives and our communities, and we have to move our butts a little bit to make
yeah,
things happen.
What do we care about more than the food that we as a society eat, that we personally eat, that we feed our families, and that people around us are eating, and the impact that that has on the health of everybody?
And I would like to think that our elected officials want the same thing that we want. That doesn't everyone want healthy food that's affordable? That's kind of what confuses me. And then I think, what is it that's confusing our elected officials? Are they hearing, or they're being lobbied by Big Ag so much that they get confused?
I think it's that if you look at, you know, the realities of the situation, if you want to get a bill passed, so for example, the National Sustainable Agriculture Coalition very much would like to see the new farm bill passed this year in 2012.
Mm-hmm.
What does it take to get that passed? And people, again, have interests in their state or district, whatever type of growers it is that they have to try to protect their concerns. And, you know, you have to figure out how do you get the votes to pass what you need to pass. And so I'll give you an example of that. So, again, the number one biggest expenditure in the Farm Bill is nutrition benefits, and that includes the SNAP benefits, formerly known as food stamps. Well, the House's approach, we're in, as you I'm sure know, a big deficit-cutting atmosphere up here on Capitol Hill. And so the House's approach was to cut a lot of money out of the nutrition benefits, out of SNAP benefits. They don't know right now. They haven't scheduled a time to bring the House Agriculture Committee's bill to the floor because they don't know if they can pass it. And part of the reason for that is that cutting so much money out of that nutrition program is controversial, and a lot of people might vote against it.
Mm-hmm. And I was reading your most recent blog post on your website, National Sustainable Agriculture Coalition, at sustainableagriculture.net, about how the House was trying to get the current farm bill extended.
Yeah, so what happened there, so the House Agriculture Committee, which is chaired by Congressman Lucas with Ranking Member Congressman Peterson, passed a bill out of committee. And we would like to see that bill go to the House floor so that it can be debated and amended in a normal process. However, the leadership of the House, including Speaker Boehner, wanted to just pass a one-year extension and kind of circumvent the House Agriculture Committee. Fortunately, that attempt appears to have failed. Which we think that that's a good thing. We were arguing against that kind of extension.
Yeah, well, we'd like to see some action and get some changes made.
Yes, we'd like to see some real reform. Everybody's putting the term reform in their title, but let's get some real reform.
Yeah. Okay, lots more to talk about, but I want to take a quick break. So, Susan, stay with us, and we will be right back to talk probably more about the Farm Bill and other food-related issues.
Great. Thank you, Karen.
Thanks. Hello, I'm Karen Hartglass. You're listening to It's All About Food. And thank you so much for joining me on this first day of August in 2012. And I am speaking with Susan Perlman, the Executive Director of the National Sustainable Agriculture Coalition. Okay,
thank you,
Susan.
Karen.
You're welcome. Thank you. So the big chunk of the Farm Bill is the food security portion, the SNAP program, the good old food stamp program. And that's changed a bit over the years, too. And hopefully, there's a lot of talk, but it's not moving in moving very quickly, but we don't do anything very quickly. But I would think that if we were giving people who were food insecure, people who were hungry, people who didn't have access to enough food with their own financial, and they needed help, that it should be healthy food. And unfortunately, we're seeing more people that are using the SNAP system that they are overweight, obese, and are not making the right choices.
Well, one comment I would make to that is that if you look at the American population as a whole,
we're
becoming heavier and we're making some bad food decisions. And I don't know if it's that people who are using SNAP benefits do that more than the average American. I think it's a great concern right across the board. Now, what some folks are trying to do is give incentives for people to choose healthier food. So Senator Stabenow, the chairwoman of the Senate Agriculture Committee, included in her farm bill a double up buck program so that if people take their benefits to the farmers market, they get twice as much value. They double the value as compared to purchasing other foods. And that's an incentive way. It's a carrot way of getting people to make some really good food decisions.
Now, there are lots of people in this country who are taking advantage of this program, and it just blows me away how many people use it.
It's grown a lot in recent years, and that is due largely to the recession.
Yeah, so it's really good that it's there, even though some people might want to get rid of it or reduce it, but it really is important. And one of the benefits of living in a wealthy country that can provide security in numerous different forms. But it has its problems, the program. And there have been some improvements.
It does. But let me say that there are other programs in the Farm Bill that have a lot more institutional problems built into them than the SNAP. I mean, I hear a lot of verbiage on Capitol Hill about abuse of the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program and, you know, clamping down on abuse. I wish I heard that much discussion on abuse of, for example, the crop insurance program.
Mm-hmm. So the crop insurance, it's a smaller portion of the farm bill, but the people that abuse it really abuse it big.
Well, it is smaller. That's true that the nutrition program is by far the biggest slice of the farm bill, but I would also argue that's a reason why everybody is invested in the farm bill. You know, if you are a taxpayer, you're contributing to it. If you are a consumer, it impacts you. And if you care about poverty in this country and whether low-income people, including those who are working jobs or multiple jobs, you know, are getting the support that they need, I think that everybody has a stake in the farm bill fight.
We have a problem with food deserts in this country. Is the farm bill, does it deal with problems like that?
Yeah, there's a healthy food financing initiative that we're trying to get off the ground to address some of the food desert problems. Also, the National Sustainable Agriculture works really hard to develop local and regional food systems. We have a marker bill that we're strongly supporting. It was put in by Congresswoman Shelley Pingree of Maine and Senator Sherrod Brown of Ohio. It's called the Local Farms, Food, and Jobs Act, and it's trying to rebuild everything from farm to distribution to consumer to get that healthy food to people, including vulnerable people who are located in places that don't normally have access to healthy food.
I was reading in Dan Imhoff's book, Food Fight, and that's where I got a lot of better understanding of what's going on in the government. And so there are different the money that is in the bill that goes to different places, there's like two kinds. Some of it is permanent. Others is sort of soft and can be changed. But it seems like all of it can be changed anyway. But
yes.
Some's more permanent
Bingo.
Than temporarily yeah. permanent, and others are temporary.
Bingo, you got it right. So Congress seems to change the rules as they're playing the game. It can be frustrating sometimes, but you have two different types of money. So the Farm Bill is an authorizing bill, and it authorizes funding for programs in two ways, one with mandatory money and two with discretionary money. So the premise of mandatory money is that Congress has passed that amount of money, and that's going to be in the program, no questions asked. Whereas the amounts that are appropriated, they say we want $50 million appropriated in, you know, in X year for X program, but that has to go each year through the annual appropriation cycle. There are appropriations committees in both the Senate and the House of Representatives, and they make those calls sort of like, you know, here's how much money we have. They could, in theory, appropriate more. Often they appropriate less. But what we've seen recently is a mechanism called CHIMPS. CHIMPS stands for Changes in Mandatory Programs. And so they're doing, so Congress has been doing in recent years something that, you know, one would think that they wouldn't have done, which is they're taking mandatory funding out of programs, for example, in the Farm Bill, conservation programs. Those are funded with mandatory money. They reward the best stewards of the land. They reward farmers for reducing pollution, reducing reliance on fossil fuels, et cetera, et cetera. And Congress has been pulling money out of those programs, even though it's mandatory money, in recent years.
So that should be a good thing.
No, that's a bad thing. The conservation programs, in our opinion, are a good thing. Underfunding them is a bad thing.
Right, but taking money from another program to fund them is a good thing, but then that money gets pulled out of it anyway.
Well, so what we've seen happen is that Congress often goes to these good conservation programs as a go-to place, like an ATM, to take money for other things. So the House is currently discussing how do we pay for drought. Now, there are drought provisions in both the Senate and the House bill, and we say if you want to address drought, pass the Farm Bill this year. What some of the folks are saying on Capitol Hill is let's pull money away from the conservation programs and put it into emergency drought relief. So underfunding and always using the conservation programs as a go-to source of money for other objectives is something we do not support.
And obviously, well, it's obviously not obvious to some people, but we wouldn't have the droughts, or at least not the magnitude that we're seeing today, if we had some really rigorous conservation policies in place.
Yeah, part of being sustainable is you are farming for the long term. So you're trying to reduce your inputs. You're trying to reduce the impacts of the agriculture that you practice. You're trying to reduce soil erosion and water pollution, runoff, things like that. And not only reducing energy use, but in a renewable way, producing energy in a way that benefits the environment. These are all exciting things. There's a little bit of money for them in the Farm Bill. There could be a lot more.
Yeah, it's so hard for us to look ahead and plan for the future. We want everything right now.
I've been hearing the energy conservation political speeches, you know, from Jimmy Carter on in the 70s.
I know, and gosh, I dream of what we could have had today if we had really made some significant differences back in Jimmy Carter's time.
And that's again to get to the point of why should people care about the Farm Bill? It's your money, and it's an opportunity to invest in smart policies for the future. And it's an opportunity that Congress doesn't make the most of. And that's why they need to hear from you.
I absolutely agree. It's just our society, not everyone, but many people are so short-sighted today and just want to take care of their immediate needs. There's another big piece is involved with commodity programs. What are the commodity?
Well, again, it's a handful of crops like corn, soy, wheat, cotton, and rice. that get payments, and there are different types of payments through the commodity title. There are the direct payments, and that may shift into a revenue program called ARC in the new farm bill, but it's basically supporting farmers to grow those row crops.
And how did those crops get so lucky?
Political cachet.
Yeah, so that's corn and soy and cotton and wheat.
And it's a big part of what our country produces, but the problem is that there are disincentives in the system. So if you are receiving a lot of government subsidies to grow a large tract of land monocropped for, you know, a crop like corn or something, you actually can get penalized if you also grow fruits and vegetables on that land. There's a provision we're trying to fix through the new farm bill where if you are an organic producer and you seek insurance, you pay a higher premium than conventional production on the theory that organic is more risky. And then if you have a loss, you get paid out at conventional prices. So it's like a double whammy against organic production. You know, so we're trying to sort of fix some of these disincentives in the program.
I have to take very slow, deep breaths from time to time because this stuff really can make my blood boil. It is just so awful. Things, we could just be so phenomenal if we would make some very simple changes. But then a few people would lose.
I would say that most people and more people really care about food, and they're thinking about where their food comes from. And there's a lot they can do. So there are a couple of things that I'll refer folks to right now. You mentioned our website, sustainableagriculture.net. If you go to sustainableagriculture.net, you can sign on to our citizens petition. And that basically says that we want policies that help sustainable farmers. You can also sign up for our action alerts. And everywhere where there's something as important happening in the new farm bill, we'll let you know and give you an opportunity to weigh in with your members of Congress.
Now, let me ask you, what do you do with petitions that people sign?
So we are gathering thousands of signatures of people from around the country and letting our folks on Capitol Hill know that, but also letting those folks know when they have opportunities to weigh in. So if the farm bill comes to the House floor, we might send you an action alert saying, today's the day, call your representative and tell him or her, you know, to vote for organic or something to that effect.
Right. And we have to believe that if they get lots and lots of calls, it will make a difference in how they vote on the floor.
Yeah. You know, I mean, an optimistic example is when the Senate floor took up the farm bill, they made a lot of really good improvements to it. They voted, you know, for a lot of good amendments and against a lot of very bad amendments, and they did so because they heard from their constituents.
Right, so we have to be noisy.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, so going to sustainableagriculture.net will keep us on top of the things that we need to be noisy about. That's good to know.
Yeah.
What else can we do?
Well, you know, one fun thing that people can do is just be aware that this upcoming week in August is Farmers Market Week. So if you can, visit your farmers market.
This week? This is the first week of August?
The first week in August. It starts on Sunday and it goes through the week.
Okay, I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And so what does that mean? I guess different farmers markets will be doing different things, if
yes,
at all.
Exactly.
But it's their week.
Different farmers market around the country are doing different things to celebrate Farmers Market Week. But you as a person who cares about good food can celebrate by going with your friends to the farmers market and talking with your local farmers and asking them questions about how they do what they do and, you know, buying their products.
Yeah, it really is up to us to make a difference, and definitely getting to know our farmers, going to farmers markets, talking to people. Even if you don't have access to a farmers market, going to your neighborhood grocery and talking to the manager about the food that they're offering.
And you could even say to your local supermarket manager, do you offer local food and do you label it as local?
Labeling. There's a good word.
Yeah.
Labeling. So it's been a very painful process to get the information on our food. And I remember some stuff was passed in 2008 that was a bit of a struggle, but we've gotten, just for example, to know where our meat has come from.
Yes, so labeling is a complicated issue, and frankly, I think that there's so much room for consumer confusion. There are different labels, so there are labels that producers can put on their own food. There are words like wholesome that means something close to nothing.
Nothing, natural, nothing.
Well, so natural is a USDA term, and so for meat, for example, that is labeled natural, what that currently means is that after slaughter and after it's been cut up into pieces, there was no post-slaughter processing, or minimal. It's minimally processed after slaughter. It does not mean that the animals were raised in an organic way. It doesn't mean that they were raised in a humane way. So an animal that, you know, was kept in a cage for part of its life, that was fed antibiotics and other disturbing types of things,
it could still be natural.
Could still be labeled natural.
And but natural is like not irradiated, or it doesn't have that ammonia process to make it pink slime or something like that.
Well, it basically means that some additives weren't added at the end of the process. It's not fully meaningless, but I would, as a consumer, disregard a natural label entirely.
Yeah.
Now, there are some food companies that really do have better standards that label their food natural. And in their term, it's meaningful, but not because of the government. The government's actually hurting them, not helping them, by allowing competitors who aren't engaging in good practices to also label as natural.
Okay. And part of the labeling was to find out where the food comes from.
Yeah, right.
And that's been a bit of a struggle. I think it's a little easier with produce because the produce really only grows in one place, but then it could be processed somewhere else. But
this is, again, stepping out of my role as the executive director of the National Sustainable Agriculture, and I'll just talk as an individual consumer.
Okay.
I like to buy foods that are produced locally or regionally if I can.
Yes.
And if I know that they have some good standards, like not using a lot of pesticides, things like that, I really appreciate it. Using conservation practices, I really appreciate those and try to reinforce them. I think with fruits and vegetables, things can come from all over the world. You could get fruits and vegetables in from China. A lot comes from the proverbial salad bowl in California, which is not necessarily bad, but people, you should think about where your food comes from. Sometimes,
nutty that the majority of our food might come from halfway around the world.
It can be really confusing, and I'll give an example of that. There's country of origin labeling, and for a time, pigs who were raised in Canada were being trucked to California and then shipped to Hawaii and slaughtered in Hawaii, and there was a Hawaii Fresh label put on it, and the argument was part of the process, the slaughtering part of the process, was done in Hawaii, therefore we can put a Hawaii Fresh label on it. But I think that's very confusing to consumers because they don't understand that these pigs came from Canada and endured many days of transport to get to Hawaii.
Yeah, and believe me, it wasn't first class.
No.
It's probably a pretty horrific journey, and probably many of them died in the process.
Yeah. Long-distance transport of animals to slaughter is a concern, and that's again why supporting local and regional food systems is helpful, and again why advocates for sustainable agriculture have been trying to get it so that smaller-sized producers have access to slaughterhouses.
Yeah. So I think your point as a consumer is important, and so I know many people complain about the cost of their food, and unfortunately, they don't really realize the true cost of their food. And when we're spending the extra money on, sometimes farmers market food is less expensive, sometimes it's more expensive. Organic food can be the same, more or less. You just have to be paying attention. And in some areas, certainly we have access to more organic and locally grown foods than other places. But the cost of quality food is worth it from so many points of view. And I think that the government and the farmers need to hear our voice by what we're paying for.
Yeah, and I would also say to your listeners that if you haven't done this yet, I recommend going out and visiting a farm. Like a local farm where people are really doing things by hand. They work very, very hard, and they make very, very little money. When I go to a farmer's market, or when I go to my supermarket manager and say, is this produce local? If so, could you label it as local? I view all of that as an investment in the way that I want my food to be produced. It's a better system, and for society as a whole, it costs less over the long term.
You're making me think of a lot of things as we just have a few minutes left. And I don't like to get into any kind of doom and gloom scenario, but the state of our agricultural system is really fragile. We're losing a lot of topsoil. There's going to be areas that won't be able to grow food soon. We're depleting our aquifers very quickly because of the way that we grow a lot of food, and we're not caring for what we really need to care for in order to continue to be able to feed all of us. And then we have this disconnect in our community with so many things, not just with food, but certainly with food and with farmers. And, you know, many of us aren't mindful. We just grab some fast food. We eat some of it. We throw some of it away with not realizing all of the impact of it. And it's so important that we need to definitely get to know our farmers. They're working so hard. And there are some people that are farming, like migrant workers and people coming from other countries, legally or illegally, and that's a whole other story, but they really work very hard for so little.
Yes, absolutely. So let me touch upon a couple of things there. So among your doom and gloom about depleting aquifers and soil loss, all true, another item to add in the mix there is climate change.
Oh, climate change, yes. I don't like to mention it because some people believe in it and some people don't, but there's so many other environmental devastating things happening that, you know, that's just one more thing.
And the good news is that the sustainable systems are more resilient. They use less water, they use less energy, they pollute less, they add nourishment back to the soil more, you know, so that's really the direction we need to go, and that's why we advocate for more USDA research into sustainable systems. And you raise another really important topic that I'd love to talk about, which is socially disadvantaged farmers and ranchers. And these include immigrants, minorities, women. There have been a series of lawsuits at the USDA, successful lawsuits, discrimination claims that pertain to African-American farmers, Hispanic farmers, and others. And I should mention, by the way, among social disadvantage includes Native American Indians as well. And so there are programs that, because of historic unfairness to these producers, have been trying to level the playing field and make it so that producers can be farmers, workers can be farmers in their own right, and those who own their own farms are able to thrive and to contribute good, healthy foods to their communities. By the way, a disproportionate amount of minority farmers are producing fruits and vegetables, the so-called specialty crops, and on smaller farms.
Right.
And again, they've been recipients of systematic discrimination, and unfortunately, in the new farm bill,
we just have a few seconds left.
Okay, jeopardy of cutting their funding, which is a real problem.
Big problem. Susan, thank you so much for joining me. I learned a lot, and I really appreciated you coming on the show today. And you know what? It's all about food. so.
Thank you, Karen.
Okay. Susan Perlman of the National Sustainable Agriculture Coalition. Go to sustainableagriculture.net for more information. And I'm Karen Hartkless with Responsible Eating and Living. Thank you so much for joining me. Have a delicious week.